Coming to you live from a post-apocalyptic wasteland full of vehicular mayhem, I'm Tom Rich.
Oh my god, stop talking about Fury Road.
You guys.
Everybody has heard of Sagaland, and everyone must have his own idea of what it is like. Here is a story which people sometimes tell. Once upon a time there lived a king, and he dwelt in a splendid castle high above the forest of Sagaland. His subjects could not have wished for a better king, so wise and benevolent was his rule. Many years passed, and the king, feeling that he was growing old, began to worry about who should rule after him, for he had no children. But word had often come to the king of strange and wonderful things, which were said to be hidden in the forest of Sagaland, and these had aroused his curiosity and now filled his heart with longing. And so he resolved that a search should be made for these remarkable things, so that they might be collected at his castle, where everyone might see them and marvel at them. No sooner had he decided on this plan than he sent out heralds throughout the land to announce that whoever should find and lead him to the hiding places of three of these marvelous things would succeed to his throne.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. You're probably wondering what the hell is going on right now. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And today we're bringing you yet another installment of board games from our childhood, Sagaland Edition.
I am so excited to finally get to play this game.
He keeps bringing it up, and the temptation is immense for me to just say, you know what, we're actually not going to play it. We're just not going to play it because I just want you to continue suffering for another decade. But it's all set up, and coming up with a different segment sounds like work.
And so, we don't put work into this podcast. Well, I don't put work into the podcast. He puts hours and hours of work into it, and I just sort of show up and say hurtful, mean-spirited things about him.
We even tried to invent work for Tom with the blog post, but that kind of dried up after a couple episodes. The plan is to actually put those up, though. Like, hopefully eventually that'll happen.
Yeah. You know? It's part of the plan.
We all hope. Tom, come on.
I don't have administrator access to post them.
What? Yes, you do.
Oh, I do? Never mind. I have no excuse.
You have exactly the same access that I have.
Well, I fall asleep, like, a lot. It's like narcolepsy, only it's not actually a condition.
You're just lazy.
I'm just lazy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But other than that, it's exactly like narcolepsy.
Cool.
Yeah. So Sagaland, we're going to play it now. We're going to go on a quest to find these wonderful things for the king. So basically the idea with Sagaland here is that we've got this whimsical German forest on the board here, and there's these little trees all around it.
I'm going to post a picture of it in the show notes, which I realize, unless I remember to take another one, will be upside down because Tom set the board up facing him. And the art actually has direction in this game.
Oh, should I turn it around?
That's fine. Okay. I'll take another one, hopefully, if I remember. Or everyone can just see it upside down. That's fine.
You could use the power of the computer to rotate it.
No, because I didn't take it. I didn't take the picture from directly above, so it will look totally bizarre if I try to turn it around.
That's fine. Par for the course for this thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's the sort of quality we like to bring to our productions.
Damn right. So we've got these trees throughout the forest, and on the bottoms of the trees are printed wonderful things that we can find. Mm-hmm. And we're going to wander around the woods, going to trees, looking at what's underneath them, and remembering that. We've just got to remember what we've seen under the trees. Meanwhile, at the king's castle, there's a deck of cards, the topmost of which is flipped over and shows one of the wonderful things.
It appears to be a crown.
At the moment. There's a frog, too.
Yeah.
It's a frog crown. So we have to go to the castle.
Is a frog crown a frown? Is that where that word came from?
Yeah.
Because frog kings are sad.
Always.
Etymology, everyone.
We have to go to the castle. when there's a, and we then have to tell the king where the currently displayed thing from the deck of cards is hidden, which tree it's hidden under. If we get it right, we get to keep the card. If we get it wrong, we have to go straight back to the village, which is far away from everything else.
So it's like a roll and move mixed with memory.
Yep. You have to find three things, get three cards, and you win.
We'll see how this shakes out, but in looking at the rules already, it looks like this game is going to be similar to Eureka in that you have to move exactly what you rolled.
Well, it actually has kind of an interesting mechanic going on with its movement that I think we should talk about because we're game designers. Is that what we are?
That's what we keep telling people.
Fair enough. And if you say things enough, it becomes true. So the game has you roll two dice on your movement. And you roll them, and then you have those numbers.
They're six-sided dice.
They're standard six-sided dice. And you can use each one of them to move in a single direction, but you have to move that dice's full value in that direction.
Right.
So you could use them both to move in the same direction, move particularly far, but you could also use them to move in opposite directions if you had to kind of shimmy in order to land on the exact space you wanted. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an interesting tweak to the roll and move mechanic. I don't know if it's good. We'll find out.
Yeah, but I don't know that it's an interesting tweak from gameplay. I think it's an interesting concept that they were like, yeah, we're just doing it that way now. So at least it's not just roll and move. It's roll and move with a little bit of agency added to your movement, not much.
A little bit of puzzling out how best to use what you're given.
I think it's going to be Math Wizard style, a lot of counting things, but we'll see.
Also, if you roll dubs, you can do magic. You can just perform magic spells.
Yeah, that does seem to be the case.
So,
what are those spells?
If you roll a hot dubs, you have to not move if you want to cast spells.
For those of you who speak English, he means if you roll the same thing on both of the two six-sided dice that you rolled. What hot dubs means.
Why did you say, for those of you that speak English, and then start talking German? So if you roll doubles, you can choose not to move, and then you can do any magic spell that you want. You can move your piece to any unoccupied blue space and look under the tree by it. The trees are all by blue spaces. You can move your piece toward the castle, to the first space beyond the stone bridge, which is, you know, close to the castle that way. You can change the question card in the castle courtyard by shuffling it and putting the new topmost one on the top. And that's it. Those are all of them. I said it as though there was a fourth one, but there wasn't. There were only three.
Which is less than four.
Except in inaccurate mathematics.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point that is often overlooked.
It's a branch of math that is just not correct.
Yeah. I practice it often. So without further ado, not a Jew. That doesn't make any sense.
But is it? What about au jus? Like the dipping
sauce?
What
if you found out after all these years that au jus is really French for ass juice?
I would regret many, many of my trips to Arby's as a young man.
I regret every trip to Arby's in my whole life.
You get to meet the guys who are in Smash Mouth.
It's true. They all work there.
They work at Arby's. They work at all of the Arby's.
It's all of them.
It's sort of a quantum thing.
Were there clones or robots?
No, it's just the same guys, but at all the Arby's.
Once you pass behind the counter of an Arby's, you actually occupy the same space.
Yeah, at all Arby's.
Yeah.
It's deeply weird.
Yeah. You think there would be better applications for that sort of wizardry?
Nope.
No,
nope.
That's the best.
The best possible use is
putting Arby's. Smash Mouth at all the Arby's.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, guys from Smash Mouth, if you listen to this, you know, no hard feelings, and you're keeping that chain running, you know, pretty well.
Yeah, you
know,
you had that one song, the, what was it? You know, hey now, you're a something or other.
Some sort of
do
star.
Do a thing, yeah.
A pawn
do
star.
Do stuff, yeah. And, like, that was catchy. It got stuck in your head.
Sure. So moving on with our lives.
Can we please?
Let's play Saga Land.
We haven't determined who goes first yet. We have to lots.
I think it says by lots, which is just roll.
Does that mean one of us turns into salt?
No, that would be by lots wife.
Oh. I rolled a 4.
I rolled a 2.
So I get to go first.
Well, assuming in this game of lots that higher numbers are better.
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming, because it's better for me that way.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to roll a 4 and a 2. And so I go 1... 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I go to there. And I start into the woods of Sagaland looking for wonderful things.
Thunderful wings. I rolled a 5 and a choo-choo train because we're using one of the dice from Eureka because the one from this game is missing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I roll the dice again. I got a 1 and a 3. A 1, a 2, a 3, a 4. I land on a tree. So now, since I'm by a tree now, I can discreetly peek underneath the tree's skirts and find out what wonderful thing is hidden there.
That's how they found out the dinosaur's gender in Jurassic Park.
How excited are you for Jurassic World?
So excited. I don't even have words for it. That's wow. How excited I am. What was under that tree you picked up?
I can't tell you. It's a secret.
Oh, dang. I rolled a 6 in a choo-choo train. 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you have to move both dice, or can you just be like, I'm just not going
to
move that one?
I think you have to move both dice. Let's check the Ralbach. It doesn't say anything about being allowed to skip it, and every reference it makes is to doing both. So I assume you can't skip one? And it's in keeping with the way these games seem to work. But I don't really know. You're kind of concerned because you're not going to land anywhere close to them.
Well, no, I only have one more to go.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll just be there.
I guess. It seems to be the case.
Okay.
I'll go with it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. So I did the same thing.
And we're back. We chose to...
Where were we?
We chose to cut off the mics to finish playing the game because it did not seem like it was going to be...
No. We agreed. We were in the magical forest of Sagaland.
We
got
in
pulled
the
into the game.
Forest of Sagaland, and it was harrowing, but it only lasted several minutes.
Some Jumanji went down in here, man. Come on.
So we completed the game, and Tom won handily and quickly.
Vigorously, you might say.
I wouldn't. That's why I didn't.
Yeah, so Sagaland went pretty quick, but I felt like it could have gone a lot longer.
It could have dragged on forever.
Yeah.
Especially given, and this is a game I grew up with, though, I think much like Eureka, we didn't actually play it correctly when I was a child. I think a bunch of ADD people trying to play this game could drag on for a long, long... Now, if Rick and Matt, my brothers were playing. Well, no, if Rick was playing, I'm not going to give Matt too much credit on the not having ADHD level. But if Rick were playing with us, I think he would have just destroyed us all handily while we wandered around trying to remember which tree had which thing under it.
Or which tree you had looked at.
Yeah, or he may even have spent the whole time just running around, because one of the mechanics we didn't talk about up front is if you manage to land exactly on top of another player, they get bopped on the head and sent back to the start. And so he might have just run around trying to do that to us. But yeah, but basically once you get to the castle on the other side of the board and you can guess, see, you know, did we even mention how the game works?
Yeah, I talked about that.
Once you get to the castle and you're guessing where the trees are, like what magical, wonderful thing is under each tree, you can just sit there.
And just keep going.
And just keep guessing on each concurrent turn.
And as long as you get it right and nobody comes along to bop you on the head, you can just keep going.
You can just keep going indefinitely, which is what Tom did.
Until you get the 3 that you need to win. And it happened that the 3 that I pulled as I sat there digging through the castle, I had seen in my travels.
Yeah. And I didn't roll doubles once the whole time. So I was waiting to at least reshuffle the deck.
Right. And hopefully end my rampage.
Yeah, but it never happened. So it ended quite quickly.
Yep. Thoughts on Sagaland, like as a piece of game design, as a piece of... What's the German equivalent of Americana? Germanicana?
Sure.
Okay. As a relic of the 1980s? As a relic of your childhood?
I still like it. I look fondly on it. Fondly is a really funny word. It's kind of fondly. It could be fondler.
Got a little fondly in there.
It's not the fondlest.
It's fondlish.
Yeah. I really like it. I like the art. I like the components. But the gameplay's just not very good.
No, it's... And I feel like the head bopping mechanic, while amusing the first time, especially in a game with more players who were paying a little bit of attention, would very quickly make things drag to a nightmarish degree.
It could. I mean, I don't know. Like, I didn't, like I said, I didn't see doubles the whole game. Like, you could be depending on that. You could never, ever roll the right number to exactly bop someone on the head.
That's true.
You can't just do it while passing them. You have to land on them.
I think, too, the board layout plays into that a little bit because, I mean, it's not necessarily easy to catch somebody. You know, you might be in a position where there's no good way to get to where they are, especially... if you look at the picture Johannes took, the right side...
I do need to remember to take a better picture. You're saying right side as you are looking at it also. Keep doing that. I'll post a right side up picture.
Okay. The side with the castle on it over there, it's separated from the rest of the board by a river, and there's only three ways across that river. So once you're on that side, it's much harder for other players to chase you down.
Yeah.
It's just harder in general for them to get over there.
Yep.
But the head bopping mechanic could certainly make things drag, especially if you had a vindictive and mean-spirited player chasing you down.
Sibling.
That's really I was talking about Ricky harming you in your childhood there.
Yeah.
So that could be a problem, but not, we generally don't like that kind of mechanic where you're just sort of peeing in the other player's Wheaties too much here at Mildly Alarming Games. In our design studio. But the other thing that's kind of weird is that the movement mechanic was not immensely clear from the rule book.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the thing, you roll two dice, you've got to move the complete distance on each dice. That was pretty clear. Because there's one situation where you can't when you're trying to get into the castle. And so it was pretty clear that in other situations you had to use both dice. But what wasn't clear is that if you end your movement from one of the two dice on a tree... Do you get to look at that tree, or do you then have to keep moving for the other dice and only get to look at the tree if you land
finally
for both
end
dice.
Your movement on? Yeah,
we ended up going with the former interpretation where you could split your move a little bit. The first dice lands you on a tree, you can look, and then you have to keep going. But I could entertain the argument for the other way around.
Yeah.
I think.
So overall, honestly, I think the game is still better than a lot of the board game fare that was available at the time.
Blows the shit out of Monopoly.
Yeah, I would. Well, what doesn't? But I'd play this before Sorry. I'd play this before
Risk.
You'd
play Monopoly before
wouldn't?
Risk. Yeah.
I'd play Monopoly before I'd play Risk. But I think it was a step in the right direction. I think a few more years, maybe, who knows, maybe this is the 1981 version of Sagaland. Maybe it's been re-released with some tweaks. I don't know. But it certainly looks nice, and that's kind of one of the things we wanted to move into talking about is component quality and art.
Component quality and art.
Doop-a-doop-doop-doop-doop. That's the theme song for the component quality and art segment.
Yeah.
Speaking of quality and art.
It's got that little kind of fart noise at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
That I made with my mouth.
Thanks for doing that.
You're welcome. I didn't think you'd appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm as surprised as you are.
when we're talking about board and card games and these sorts of toys, you know, physical objects that you're going to hold and handle and play with and move around, and you're gonna punch them out of their little frames, and you're gonna put stickers on them, and you're gonna have a great time. How much does that component quality factor into your overall enjoyment of the game, and like what impact does it have?
And not just enjoyment of the game, but choice whether or not
choice
to,
of game, yeah,
yeah.
So Sagaland's component quality is actually pretty high. Like, I'm looking at the cards that have that you dig through that deck, and they're not really cards even. They're more like tiles. They're thick cardboard, you know.
Yeah,
they're
hefty.
They look
nice. The art is well done.
Yeah, they clearly hired their finest, this is the 80s, so probably West German artist to do it, to take care of business. I don't know, were they made? Does it say anywhere? Like, where? Which Germany it came from?
No, I assume it's West.
Let's look at the box.
Made in West Germany.
I was going to say, I don't think they were allowed to have fun, produce things that were fun, or send any of the things that they produced out of the country in East Germany.
That's so fair.
They had Traubies and sadness.
I suppose your dad probably wouldn't have worked in East Germany either, I would guess, back in the 80s.
I don't know when he even started working for the German company that he worked for.
Yeah, yeah. If it was before or after.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But, yeah, Traubis.
That's the one
funny thing I know about East Germany. There are these horrible little cars.
Oh, gotcha.
Like, people make jokes about, well, made jokes. This is probably even dating myself, but made jokes about Yugos. The Traubis were that in East Germany. They're just these mm-hmm. absolutely horrible little, like, miniature half pickup truck cars. Mm-hmm. They said, why does the Traubi have windshield wipers on the inside to clean up from the driver going? I love that joke. I think I love that joke because my dad told it to me when I was really little, and so everything he said that was a joke was funny, but I still love that joke.
It's a pretty good joke.
It's like a joke I tell about your car now.
What do you mean about my car, Mike?
That's true. You don't have your own car anymore.
Yeah, it's true. My wife drives it all the time. I purchased a Chevy Sonic at one point.
You did indeed.
I have gotten endless mockery about it. But no, check this out. Check this business out, the internet, and vindicate my position on it. So Alphonse is getting a new car a while back, right?
I'm going to let you tell this story, but I already know you're wrong. Carry on.
Oh, I didn't realize it was... Anyway, Alphonse is buying this new car. He's going to get a new car. And he contacts Johannes and he goes, hey, what kind of car did Tom get again? And Johannes goes, he got a Sonic. Why? And Alphonse goes, oh, well, I want to make sure that I don't get that. I'm like, oh, you're funny, Alphonse. You could die if I rub some bread on your face. Screw you. And so Alphonse proceeds to go get his new car. And he buys...
Murder by bread.
He buys or acquires or whatever a VW, was it a Golf that he got?
I think it's a Golf,
which is the same car. It's the same shape. It's the same breed of vehicle, only it's made by VW, so it costs a lot more probably than my, I don't really know.
And it probably has more horsepower than my pickup truck.
And it's pretty nice. Like, it's a good car. Like, yeah. Like, I would purchase a VW Golf. I wouldn't have any problem with that, but... He was like, no, I don't want a car that Tom got. And then he got the car that I got, except made by a German instead of by GM.
And you, that's where I'm saying you're wrong, because you feel that way because they're both four-door hatchbacks. But, like, design went into the VW Golf. And it's not beautiful, but it's not the Chevy Sonic either.
I like the
Chevy Sonic looks like the Chevy Sonic. I have no better comparison to make.
I like the Chevy Sonic. It's a good car.
I could tip your Chevy Sonic over just by breathing at it.
You could tip Alphonse's VW Golf over by breathing
at it. Yeah, but it doesn't look that way. So component design is what we're supposed to be talking about here.
Oh, this kind of ties in. You know, we're talking about the aesthetics of the vehicle.
Yeah, it's true.
Which I will be the first to admit, I have a shit sense of aesthetics in everything but writing, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, visual aesthetics don't make sense to me. I frequently have lengthy arguments with my wife about how aesthetics and clothing are nothing more than personal preferences being impinged?
No.
Forced?
Sure. I'm trying to figure out what M word you were looking for.
It's completely gone now.
Yeah.
Being forced upon other people, and she's like, no, there are actual...
just be impressed upon.
Impressed upon, that's probably what I was looking for. But she's like, no, they're real. There are actual standards that are actually there. I'm like, no, they're not.
I think your wife is wrong on that, but I think...
You probably don't agree with my radical position that all dress codes that don't have a practical function, as in, like, you have to wear these clothes because we have to make sure they're sterilized, are deeply unethical and immoral, and the people enforce them should be shot.
I mostly agree with that.
Yeah. Fist bump.
Nux. So, it's true. And certainly, you know, the aesthetics of anything are, to a point, going to be personal preference. Mm-hmm. But I think you can make a case for... We're going to try to stick to board games so we don't go too far afield.
Sure.
You know, the quality, the build quality, just the durability and the feel in your hand, mm-hmm. and the look of a game component, if not universal, is at least pretty easy to agree upon. So now art is a little different. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think it's objectively bad art, but I don't care for the artwork in Munchkin at all. it bothers me.
Yeah, I don't like
that
either.
I just don't like it.
You know, I've never actually played Munchkin.
Yeah, I haven't either because, A, the artwork, and B, the sort of people who try to get me to play Munchkin. If you're out there and you're a Munchkin player and you can make a strong case for it other than, it's fun, trust me, I'll play Munchkin with you. But I have not yet. And yeah, the art just is not my thing. But I don't think it's necessarily bad, and it probably fits the game theme well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's odd. Actually, if you bring it back to games we've talked about before, Livestock Uprising.
Yeah.
The art wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's a pretty good artist. I wish I could remember his name off the top of my head, but I can't. I want to say it's Dave something.
And we don't have the game with us, right?
No, I loaned it out. I loaned it to someone. The art looks good, but it doesn't really fit the sort of strategy game theme that the mechanics evoke, you know? So it's not bad, it's just weird. even that's a little far afield, because there are some games. Have we ever played any games that were just like, man, these, I really wish these components were better?
Oh shoot, what is it? There was one we played a while back where the cards were of a real cheap quality,
mm-hmm.
and we noticed it immediately. It's one we don't have anymore because I sold it. Battlestar Galactica.
Oh yeah, like, they had those really chintzy thin.
They almost felt like vinyl.
Yeah.
Cards there was nothing wrong with the art on them or anything, and like
right.
they worked for what you're doing, but they just felt kind of.
They rubbed against each other weird, and they kind of curled because they were almost. Yeah, like vinyl, like you said.
Yeah.
They didn't hold their shape very well. Yeah, that's one thing. Or on the flip side, games with, Sales of Glorious components are gorgeous. That's, like, the whole point of playing
God,
the game.
We should play that.
Yeah, we should. And,
ooh, do you want to play that this Saturday?
Sure.
Okay.
And then the components in Arkham aren't so bad, but they could be much nicer. Like, if it would be expensive, though, right? That's kind of another one of those. How nice can you make your components before it's like, well, now you can't afford the game. Like, the
exactly.
investigator tokens are just cardboard cutouts, and the art's good, and they look mm-hmm. nice, but they're still just cardboard cutouts mm-hmm. with a little plastic stand on them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
That's fine.
That's fine, but...
Miniatures are expensive.
Miniatures are great. Something that Livestock Uprising did really well, they have a unique, in the games I've played anyway, little triangular base for their cardboard pieces.
Oh, yeah. I really liked those.
That doesn't shred the bottom of your cardboard pieces. Mm-hmm.
And it stands up very well. Like, it's hard.
Yeah.
They don't fall over
they
easily.
They don't tip over.
I feel like that's probably a component that a company makes that you can buy for many games.
Probably.
So if we have a game we make where that has those standees, I think we need to remember that.
Yeah, because if you look at the ones in Arkham, the ones in Dead of Winter,
the ones in most games,
yeah,
honestly,
they shred the bottom of
yeah,
the cardboard.
Yeah, it's the transparent plastic one with the flat base and the two
it's
little
got two nubs on one side and one on the other.
Yeah, and
yeah.
You stick your cardboard in there, and it usually just mangles the bottom after you take if you have to take it out at all.
Yeah.
Certainly, but I know you're right. Those were very nice in Livestock Uprising. Also, I looked it up. I went to Dogmite's website.
Yeah,
their illustrator is Michael C. Conis. The name of the guy.
Okay, are they both Michael?
Yeah, the other guy is Mike Cameron.
Okay, I thought they were both Dave's, because Dave is the guy who put us in contact with him.
Also, they're both listed as Lumberjacks on their, about page. One is co-founder designer Lumberjack,
uh-huh.
and the other is co-founder illustrator Lumberjack.
Maybe
so.
They jack lumber.
They
is
might.
That how that word works?
Yeah, I assume so. Yeah, so I you're right. I think the component quality and whatnot really does make... It doesn't make a difference to whether or not the mechanics work, obviously,
right.
but it makes a big difference in the experience of play.
I don't think I would choose not to play a game that we already had based on component quality.
Mm-hmm.
It would affect my enjoyment to some small degree. I really like a nice, heavy set of dice. I love the dice in King of Tokyo.
Yeah, they're chunky.
They're heavy. They roll really nicely.
They clatter. They have a good clatter.
Yeah. If they were lighter plastic, typical D6 size, I'd still play the game mm-hmm. and I'd still enjoy it. But that's really nice. They feel hefty and of high quality.
On the flip side, though, you're never rolling more than five of those at once. So
yeah.
they fit in a good double handful very well.
Yeah.
And you can clatter them in a double handful.
Mm-hmm.
If you were playing D&D and you're playing a high level wizard.
Or zombie dice.
Or zombie
dice. 13 dice to work with.
Yeah. Where you've got to drop, 16d6, you need those smaller dice to get that.
Right. So and even zombie dice with 13 dice, they're nice hefty dice. They're just slightly smaller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the size, the design has to make sense too for a lot of different factors.
But now, on the other hand, when it comes to purchasing a game, it still wouldn't be my deciding factor probably, but I would be much more likely to buy a game with nice components than not nice components.
I feel like I'm always, when I buy a game and I open the box and it's got like particularly nice components, I'm always real happy about that. Like a recent one, Samurai Spirit.
Yeah.
Nice components all around. Nice art. And like, it's just, and the other thing with Samurai Spirit that I really appreciated, and I'm shamelessly stealing this critique from Shut Up and Sit Down because they got it very right, is how nicely it all fits in that box.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a very small, very compact box and everything fits very tightly in it.
Yeah.
And that's nice. That's just pleasant.
Onirim has very nice components.
Oh, Onirim.
It's got that little like monster token, which we haven't even gotten a chance to use yet.
Yeah, the Incubus, I think it is.
It's just like, it's hefty. It's like cool to the touch, like it's made of clay or metal or something. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's
nice. And Onirim has excellent like packaging design too, because you take the lid off the box and there's like this, there's the expansion rule book folded inside the regular rule book, and then there's like this cardboard like eye face thing over it. It's really great.
The whole box and the rule books are perfectly square, but the front page of each rule book is a half sheet on a diagonal, so it gonna, like they
should we try to put
across
up a picture
Wait,
of this?
I'll try to put some pictures up. It's very nice.
If you're looking for a one to two player game to fill your days with, Onirim is great. Yeah, and I highly recommend
it. How many expansions are there built in?
The box we bought has 7 in it.
Yeah. It's pretty, so, and you can mix and match them, so there's so many different play styles that you can fit.
I do the math, but I don't know how.
Yeah, I don't know what math even is. So I've never been one to get into the unboxing thing. I know that's some, actually, those videos frustrate me so much, just unboxing videos. I'm like, oh my God, get the product out already. But a good unboxing experience is pretty nice too.
Onirim, we
opened it up when we were both sort of like, whoa, like,
what did we buy?
What is this? This is so great. And like this is a little random and weird, but I just installed two of them at work yesterday. Nest, the learning thermostats, have the greatest unboxing experience ever, because everything comes apart very nicely. You don't have it, you know, sometimes you get a board game box and you got to really shake it because it's got that suction between the lid and the bottom. Mm-hmm. This just came apart very nicely.
And then you get the box farts.
Yeah, box farts. That's what those are called. I knew exactly what you meant, so it might as well be.
Fair enough.
And it all comes apart in layers, the Nest unboxing, and like they gave you all the tools to install it, all the screws, everything, just like I didn't have to go to a toolbox to get anything. I was just like, I can do this, it's done. Beautiful. Onirim did that very well. A nice unboxing experience is great in a board game.
And Onirim did it nice too, because the cards for the base game were on one side of the box, and you just pull them out and you have the base game right there.
Right.
And then all of the expansion cards were stacked up on the other, it was hard to do it wrong, really.
Yeah.
It reminds me too, I haven't played this game, but I read about it, a game called Ogre, which is a game about where one player is like a giant tank, and the other player is a bunch of little tanks and soldiers fighting it. So it's kind of an asymmetric thing. But they released like a Xth anniversary edition recently that was enormous. You've seen it at the game shop.
Yeah.
It's an enormous box. It's so big that when you walk in and see it, your eye glances over it because you think it's not a game you could buy. It's an advertisement. Like literally.
Yeah.
It's
that gigantic box.
Yeah, it's got to be 2 feet square by maybe 8 inches deep or more.
I think so.
It's huge. And it's incredibly expensive too.
Yeah.
So I haven't bought it. But apparently, I was reading about it online. Apparently, when you open it up, there's a sheet on the very top that says, "Do not start punching cardboard chits. That way lies madness. Instead, follow these directions to make sure you don't, you know, completely lose things, or to make sure everything gets where it needs to be." And so kind of you're saying how nicely the thermostats you were installing fit together as you're unboxing them, and it kind of guides you to put everything to where you need it. You can do a similar thing with a board game where you can kind of guide the player or the new purchaser to set everything the way you want for that first game. You can set it up that way. And it's like a Space Alert with its scenarios for the first couple of games, where it kind of guides you to put things in the right boxes. It's
another game
and right
with
slots.
Really nice components.
Yeah. Nice component quality, just nice experience. Like, mm-hmm. it's clear the designer put a lot of thought into this is what's going to happen when they open the box. Here's what their first couple of games are going to look like and what they need to know and how I can build them into it. Just really thoughtful, I guess, is how I would put it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said, and this is something we should keep in mind, too, as we try to design a packaging for Big Man as mm-hmm. it's getting ready to be... We're finally getting to that stage with a game.
Where we have to think about art. Beyond what I can draw in Microsoft Visio.
And packaging and just, like, again, it's not necessarily a buy or don't buy, but the tactile experience mm-hmm. of how your cards and components feel, how it looks, how weighty it is in your hand, and what it'll stand up to over a lot of play mm-hmm. is, I think, invaluable in the design of a game for just helping your players enjoy it more than they would have.
You know, I would almost want to say we should make our Big Man cards as nice as these Saga Land card tiles, except that there's like 13 of them, I think.
And they're a huge stack.
And the stack is almost half as thick as our usual Big Man card deck.
Yeah, so it's about 13 of those is, I think, a little bit thicker than a standard deck of playing cards.
Yeah, so that would never work, because Big Man is 120 cards. Yeah. Well, it would work, but it would be too big of a box. It'd be cumbersome.
Mm-hmm. So this really turned into more games that we think have wonderful, beautiful game components than much of a design discussion, but
that's fine.
I think the point stands.
Yeah, I think the point stands. And Sagaland does have very lovely art and very nice, like, component. It's, like, one of the things with Sagaland, it would have been easy for them, for these trees where you find the wonderful things under mm-hmm. them. It would have been easy for that to just be a token, like a cardboard token with the thing printed on one side and a tree on the other. But it's a three-dimensional plastic tree, and it's got the thing underneath it, and you can pick it up and look at it, and it makes the board look lovely.
That it does.
Because essentially with board games, we're always talking about playing with toys. And toys are more fun when they've got that nice tactile sense.
Those die-cast metal Transformer figures were always way cooler than the plastic ones.
Exactly. The tactile experience should be part of your game.
Yep. So if you guys have games with great or lousy component quality that you would like to let us know about, or if there are games that we should check out, hit us up on Twitter at @mildlyalarming.
You can send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You could leave a comment on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com.
Or you could find a stranger and just rub their hand and really just experience the tactile sensation of it, and I will know what you wanted to tell us via that mechanism.
It's what palm reading really is.
Really is. And now, a word from our sponsor. The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by toilet paper. Do you ever go poop? Make a tinkle? Ever get a little bit of, well, you know, down there? Grab a slice of toilet paper and take care of that business. It's soft, absorbent, and when you're done, you can flush it away. And don't worry about the residue of your potty break choking out a dolphin somewhere down the line. Good old TP is biodegradable. In a pinch, you can even use it to blow your nose. Just make sure you grab a clean piece.
Why would you even have a dirty piece?
Why indeed?
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And today we have a new segment. Today, we have a new segment for you. I'm leaving that in. Called Disagreement Box.
Yes, the disagreement box, where two men enter with a disagreement and one man leaves with an answer to that disagreement, but the other man gets to come out too because we're friends and we don't want to hurt each other.
I thought you were going to say the other man leaves with stitches.
No, this is a kind and gentle podcast.
In the interest of full disclosure, we came up with the concept of disagreement box a while ago, but we have had such a hard time coming up with something that we disagree upon.
And that would make for an intriguing podcast.
And that we wouldn't get so angry at one another about that we wouldn't be friends anymore. And that wasn't political.
Yeah.
But now we have something.
Johannes is an anarcho-fascist libertarian, and I am a crypto-fascist. Progressive.
I don't know what any of that
means. I just tacked some words together there.
Yeah. I don't think I would have jokingly or otherwise admitted to either one of us being any kind of fascist. And hopefully that doesn't come back to bite us, but it's on the internet now, so there's nothing we can do about it.
Nothing we can do about it.
So our first ever disagreement box topic comes up because, as you may have noticed over our last several episodes, we have sort of a cast of characters in our lives to which we make fairly regular reference. And some of them are real and some of them may or may not be. But the ones that we got to start with, if for no other reason than that we don't want to have to sleep on the couch for the rest of our lives, are our wives.
We're both married to women folk.
Different women folk. In case that was unclear, we don't share a wife.
Yeah, that... I don't... Yeah. Mm.
So we figured the best way to introduce our wives as podcast characters and help you get to know them is by pitting them against one another in a battle to the death.
To the death!
And so today on Disagreement Box, we have Wife Fight 2015.
Two wife enter, one wife leave. Try it again.
Don't try it again, because I'm going to put a noise there, and that's probably racist.
No, it was Thunderdome.
Oh, he's...
It was a Mad Max reference. I'm making those all night tonight, man.
Yeah. Have you made other ones?
No.
Does the guy in Mad Max actually say it to, like, does not pluralized correctly?
I haven't actually seen Beyond Thunderdome, but they do say something to the effect of two men enter, one man leaves.
Right, but it's two men enter, one man leaves, not two men enter, one man leave.
I
also have to leave this conversation in now.
Yeah, fair enough. I'll have to, you know, my wife and I are probably going to watch Beyond Thunderdome in the next couple of days, so yeah. I'll let you know.
Okay. You're a monster. But bringing it back, Wife Fight 2015.
Two wife enter, one wife leave.
Oh my God. So, again, for the sake of not having to spend our nights on couches and floors, I think we probably have to defend our own wives.
I'm tempted to pull for your wife, if only because that might finally get mine to make me some dog turd casserole.
Yeah, we've been over this before. It's not happening.
Which I've been pulling for it since day one, and she has not made it. And I know she's got to have a family recipe for that stuff.
We've been over this. She knows you want it. It's no longer a punishment, and you don't have a dog.
There are dogs. You can get dog turds.
There are dogs. So, a little bit of setup. My wife, whose name is Joan, studied in at least two martial arts. She did a lot of Taekwondo. I think she might have done another, and she's been taking Krav Maga, which is the Israeli, like, they call it self-defense, but it's really just a murder rampage of a martial art designed to completely incapacitate a person. For the last couple of years, that's what she's been doing.
My wife, whose name is Elise, is a horseback riding instructor, manager, person who does that all the time. To my knowledge, she's not a martial artist at all.
But they're both fairly fit.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So the decision we have to make before we can really get into it is your wife allowed a horse?
That's the thing, and more general, we need to establish the ground rules here. Like, yeah. what is the arena in which the wives are fighting look like? Are there weapons scattered around, or does the crowd have to throw them in, or do they not, or is it just, you know, down to just their fists? You know what, we got to establish what's the scenario, because that's going to make a significant difference.
It's true. It's true.
I feel like it's pretty unfair to give my wife a horse.
I agree.
Because if you give Joan a horse, I don't think Joan rides horses often at all, if at all. So, like, she's going to be at a disadvantage there. But if you don't give Joan a horse, she's going to be at a huge disadvantage there.
Right.
I feel like that's just throwing the game altogether.
Because
no matter how much Krav Maga you know, you can't suplex a horse. It's 800 pounds.
I would love to see someone suplex a horse.
I would pay money to see that.
I saw someone posted on Imgur the other day, this ultimate fail gif compilation of like 47 fail gifs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was a horse attempting to jump over like a gate in the barn.
And it misses.
It gets over, like, but only one leg.
Ooh.
I think it catches its front leg on the thing and then somehow managed to completely stiffly, like, flip over the gate in just the most hilarious looking ever, because horses are terrible.
They're weird animals.
So it's very funny, and I enjoyed that.
Did we tell on the podcast a story about how my dad defeated a horse in hand-to-hand combat?
No, I think it bears telling.
So my dad is awesome, and he was at the Michigan Stallion Expo up in Lansing one year, and this horse, the stallion, is brought out. And for those that don't know, if you don't castrate a male horse, them bastards get real aggressive. Like, they just do.
Yeah.
And not like, you know, like large land predator aggressive, but just, you know, horny dude aggressive.
They're testy.
Yeah, you might say.
Yeah.
And so this horse's owner is leading it out there, and it loses its mind. It attacks her. It knocks her down. It's like beating her. Like, it's not with its hooves, but with like the knobby, like, elbow portion of its front legs.
Horse wrists.
Yeah, horse wrists. And it's just going to town on her. And so my dad, being the person that he is, as opposed to like the person that I am, charges the horse and starts punching it in the face. And like, but not like in the fore, because the whole front part of a horse's face is like a bone. Solid wall of bone, and you can't hit it there. Like, your hand isn't hard enough. So he's hitting it in the eye and like the cheek and stuff and the snout to get its attention. And he's kicking it. And he's like, you got to stop what you're doing, horse. And so he gets it up off of this lady, and she's, you know, hurt and whatnot. And then he and another guy or something are leading it away. I don't remember some of the details of exactly how it all played out, but it attacked the other person,
mm-hmm.
and he has to beat it up again. And eventually they were able to subdue the animal through physical violence.
The animal being the horse, not your father.
Yeah. 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 No, dad didn't need subduing. Dad was doing the subduing in this case. And, you know, squirted up, but like somebody got their finger wrapped in the chain around the horse's, on the horse's bridle, and mm-hmm. the finger was severed.
Yeah.
And the horse, I believe, was later destroyed, because holy crap, you have to destroy that horse. and you know, dad got a little citation from the Michigan State Police for, you know, bravery in the face of rampaging horse.
Yeah.
And, it was pretty cool.
So I love this story because your dad is just such a badass. But I also love this story because I'm pretty sure, if I recall correctly, your mom found out about this in the newspaper.
She didn't find out about it from the newspaper, but she found out about it not directly from my dad immediately after it happened. She found out about it considerably after and via a route that she would have preferred had not. It was, I think it might have been my sister or something, but it was not dad calling her right away saying, hey, I just beat up a horse. It was... There was a delay that she did not appreciate so much.
Yeah.
But that happened.
No judgment on either of your parents. I adore them both. I would not want to be on the wrong side of either of them.
No. That happens to mom a lot, though. Like, one time, a toe strap got loose and whipped him across the stomach. And, like, it left, like, a big toe strap-shaped bruise all the way around his torso. And she found out about it when he took off his shirt that night. So it's like, dad comes from a farm up on the Michigan's thumb. So like, physical injury and hardship and difficulty just doesn't register to him the same way.
Life.
So it's like, yeah, I got whipped by a toe strip. That happens sometimes. It's probably fine. It's not the kind of mindset.
Would have cut a lesser man in half.
Exactly. It's that kind of the thing. So, you know, hats off to you, dad. You know, tough as nails. And can beat up a horse when need be.
Which, despite the fact that apparently you can punch out a horse if you're your dad, true, at least probably should not be allowed a horse in this particular wife fight.
No, that wouldn't be fair.
So I guess it's hand-to-hand?
It's got to be hand-to-hand, and I don't know, I feel like we're not, we shouldn't, I feel like if we're going to get the true sense of which wife is the greater warrior...
Mm-hmm.
We're not really going to be throwing weapons into the room there. Like,
right.
that doesn't feel right because, like, if you know, depending on what you throw out there, it might differ very much. I don't know. I don't know how much of a markswoman Joan is. I don't know if Elise has ever fired a gun in her life either. So, you know, there's just too much. There's too many variables there.
All right. So we don't drag it out too far. We're just going to call it hand-to-hand combat in a what? 50 by 50 dirt arena.
Dirt arena?
It's dirt.
It's just a fairly coarse grit sand.
Yeah.
So you can't do like an easy pocket sand move into the other person's eyes.
Right. You just fling a clump.
Yeah. So it would be inconvenient, but it's not like, you know, sand where it would get into your membranes and really cause you a problem.
All right. I give it to my wife.
You give it to your wife. Okay. Make your case.
Well, okay. So first of all, she's got the combat training, the martial arts training.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, I think she would be the less likely of the two to pull a punch, and the more likely of the two to be like, all right, if I'm getting out of this, I'm just going to go whole hog. I think Elise might still be feeling like, I don't know what's going on here. Is this a real fight? Well, Joan was already like biting her jugular.
So you're saying that your wife is dangerously mentally unstable, while mine is nice almost to an unbelievable degree.
Your words, not mine, but I won't argue the point.
Because you would like to not sleep on your couch tonight.
I like my bed a lot.
Fair enough. I feel like it needs to be pointed out that my wife is going to have the height and the reach on Joan.
And the weight because of the height. Not because she's hefty, but because she's bigger.
No, she's
got what? 6 inches on Joan? Probably.
She's got a solid inch or so on me, roughly.
Yeah.
And I'm 5'9". So something like that.
Alright. So reach is good, but what do you do with the reach?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. You gotta have the killer instinct to make good use of that reach. So I feel like if she gets her wits about her in time and makes good use of that to like put her hand on Joan's forehead and hold her back, like that could be a winning strategy. But if Joan gets inside of her reach, she's going to have a rough time because I don't know that she doesn't have the martial arts training to fight her off. But I feel like too, if we're saying this is a wife fight, like this is the wife fight, your wife fighting now.
Yeah.
Like I feel like she's going to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we're sending them into the arena. She's not going to be like, well, is this a real wife fight or a fake? It's a real wife fight. It's pretty clear what's happening.
All right, gloves off. I feel like we're both afraid to make the case because our wives might listen to this.
My wife doesn't listen to the podcast.
Oh, well, mine does, but she'll just think it's funny, hopefully. I hope you think it's funny.
Was she in the next room?
She was. I don't know. I was just saying I hope you think it's funny, you know, for her listening later on.
Oh, okay.
But we just got to go. We just got to go for it, all right?
Okay.
Who's wife in a fight? You got to be able to defend yours and attack the others without worrying about... I will not be offended if you're like, no, your wife is a wuss and this is why, and you need to feel the same way.
Okay, fair enough. Man, I'm going to get my ass kicked for this. I got to give it to Joan. I feel like she doesn't feel pain.
This is not much of a disagreement, Buck. She actually has one hand that doesn't feel pain anymore because she stabbed herself in the arm by accident.
Yeah, like I feel like I've met her. I feel like she doesn't know pain or fear. So like that's a big advantage.
Yeah.
And like I can't really picture my wife like punching a person in the face at all. Maybe a horse like bopping it in the snout to get its attention.
My wife comes home from Krav Maga on at least weekly basis. Covered in bizarre bruises, which she then has to explain to me and then to clients when she does aquatic therapy and whatever else. Like, no, those bruises are not, you know, from my husband or anything else. I take a Krav Maga class and we hurl each other across the room on a regular basis.
Yeah, like the only downside I can see Joan having is that sort of martial arts enthusiast sense of I don't want to hurt anyone with my power. I must use my power only for good. So that might lead her to pull some punches.
No, Joan does not have a filter. She does not have a filter on her mouth, nor does she have a filter on her thrown punches, I don't believe.
Fair enough.
Well, this has been not all that much disagreement, Box, because we pretty much just came to the same conclusion.
You know, I thought I was going to be able to make the case for the height and the reach, but really, like with Krav Maga, like that's not, I feel like, you know, a little Israeli guy, because it's an Israeli martial art, He's not going to worry if the guy he's fighting is that much bigger than him. He's just going to eat him.
No.
Just going to chew him up.
Even if we go the other way, like give Elise a horse, and in the interest of fairness, give Joan a horse or like a four-wheeler or something. Joan's just going to hurt herself.
Yeah, so that's a win.
That's a win for Elise.
Win kind of,
but yeah, so mounted combat, Elise has the upper hand.
Yes, that's true. In joust, if they have to joust.
I don't know if they would be able to hit one another jousting. How's your wife for hand-eye coordination?
Well, I mean, from horseback.
Down an 18-foot shaft of wood and metal.
Yeah, no, I would think that it might take her some... If she took some practice runs, like, she wouldn't be great right off the bat, but I feel like that wouldn't be outside of her realm of expertise at all.
Okay, yeah. So,
this has been Disagreement Box, where we prove that the reason we put it off for so long because we couldn't f***ing find anything we disagree on, including which one of our wives could whoop the others. And hopefully, Hopefully I'm going to get me some dog turd casserole out of this.
I was going to ask you to let me know how the couch feels.
It's pretty comfy. I've slept on it before.
So that's been our podcast for this week.
Nothing but classy, just really intellectually stimulating material.
Of the highest quality.
The highest possible quality. Next week, who would win in a fight? Gary or Alphonse?
Oh, I was actually thinking we should do that.
Oh, we could do it right now.
I don't know who. No, we don't have time. But I don't. So we'll do it next time we do Disagreement Box. Though we'll have to flip for who gets which. So this has been the Mildly Alarming Podcast. So, if you're not already deeply offended, hit us up on Twitter and we'll offend you.
Let us know what you think of Disagreement Box at Mildly. Oh, shoot. Did I cut in before you could say the Twitter
handle? Yeah, I was just yammering. Yeah, Twitter is at Mildly Alarming.
Let us know what you think of Disagreement Box as a concept at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com, which is our email address.
Or on the website in the comment section at www.mildlyalarming.com. We also have a Facebook. We're on Stitcher and iTunes. You should leave us a positive review.
Or you can contact us by just beating your comment into the flesh of another man.
Yeah.
Or woman. Whoever.
We'll see it.
Just take them down.
Kill them. See you next week.
See ya. Next week on the Mildly Alarming Podcast, the guys talk about what happens when you use delicious soup as a game mechanic.
It's just too fiddly to figure out exactly how much soup you had at the beginning of the turn when you've been eating it and have to have your guy make more soup.
That's why each player has a soup tracker. And then, things get intense when Johannes admits his darkest fear.
It's just, what if murderous clowns aren't stalking me?
I'm here for you, buddy. Plus, Gary Smoulihan stops by and gets his hand stuck in a sea turtle. Tune in next week to the Mildly Alarming Podcast.